Now this is more than a hobby, give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me, shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate, I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on you Irons, it's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow, iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paolo Di Canio. So
welcome to another episode of the American West Ham Podcast, Season 3, Episode 5. I am your co-host Tony in the middle of nowhere. To you, I may sound a bit different, not my normal equipment, and there isn't another guy on the line speaking. It is Labor Day weekend here in America. Brawley's at the St. Louis FC match, and I barely have enough Wi-Fi to upload this recording as I am in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. If you're curious, there's a really cool place called Mountain Lake near Towanda, if anyone is curious. In this intro, you may hear some crickets, which are insects, not animals, as I was kindly interrupted by my mother in take one. For all these reasons, we have just our special interview today. We will do a Q&A episode later this week, hopefully when my new mic arrives from Amazon. However, we do want to share this amazing opportunity we had to interview Rebecca Lowe of NBC Sports. Just like the Arlo interview a few months back, or the Bobby Madley interview earlier in the summer, these special guests are down-to-earth people and really gave us some amazing answers. However, one more thing to note about the interview, we were all in 3 different time zones, so please keep that in mind if you do hear some audio corruption. However, again, we were so thankful for Rebecca, and thank you for listening to this episode, and enjoy the interview.
We have a very special guest joining us on the American West Ham podcast this week. She's worked for TalkSport, the BBC, Setanta, and ESPN, but if you watch the Premier League here in the United States, you might just recognize her from her role on NBC Sports as the lead studio host for Premier League Mornings. It's Rebecca Lowe. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rebecca. How are you?
Hey, chaps. Lovely to be with you. I'm really good. Thank you. Looking forward to another excellent Premier League weekend on the way, right?
Well, yes, it's the best. The Premier League weekends are the best. You know, all summer you just wish for it to come back, and then finally it rolls around. So, but I just want to say thank you so much for joining us. I know you have a very busy schedule, and I just want to say thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Pleasure, chaps.
So first, I want to start off in your early life. So you were born in Ealing in London, the area of Ealing in London. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. West London, just not too far away from places like Wimbledon and Shepherd's Bush and the kind of places that your listeners will probably have heard of, those kind of places. Mm-hmm. In that kind of neck of the woods.
Yeah, so, and it's near Wembley, I know that. And what is...
Oh yeah, that place.
What is ironic about this is my dad grew up in Perivale. And yes, and my grandparents still live in Perivale. So it's just your high school that you went to is less than 2 miles away from my grandparents' house in Perivale. How crazy is that?
That is crazy. I have lots of friends in Perivale. I've been there many a time. It's a lovely little place. Isn't that crazy? What a small world!
I know.
Small world.
When I was doing my research on this, I was like, "Holy crap! She's from Ealing." I was like, "I've been to Ealing. I've been to Ealing Broadway several times."
Oh, and I used to run that place. Ealing Broadway. That was my place. Yeah. Every Saturday afternoon with the girls.
Yep. it's such a cool little area, Ealing. So I had to mention that. And for those that don't know, in the Ealing area, the main football teams around there would be Brentford, QPR, Fulham, and Chelsea, that sort of teams. But my question for you is, how does a girl from Ealing end up supporting Crystal Palace?
That's a very good question. You have to blame my dad for that one. My dad grew up in the sort of Surrey area, sort of south of London, on the outskirts of London. And because of that, I mean, he moved around a lot as a kid, but they ended up, because his dad was in the military, but they ended up, he was old enough to go to a game. That was the closest game. The closest match was Crystal Palace, the closest ground. So his father would take him to stand behind the goal, and they used to watch Palace every weekend. And so, you know, when you get your team, you can't change your team, right? So when I came along, back in those days, I was born in 1980, and I don't think that in those days there weren't a lot of women going to football. But for some reason, one August, I think it was, or September day in about 1989, he had a spare ticket, and I think somebody let him down, and he had no one to go with. And I was hanging around like a bad smell at home, you know, annoying everybody. and a date. And he said, well, why don't you come with me? So he took me along. And I mean, that was just love at first sight. So age eight, he took me to Palace Everton. We lost the game, but I just thought this was maybe the greatest thing I'd ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And it was just the atmosphere, the singing, the chanting, the rude words I'd never heard before. That I said, and the, you know, when they scored a goal, I mean, just the whole feeling. I mean, it gives me chills now to think about it. And that was it. So I then had to travel every weekend, every other weekend, from Ealing, from West London to South London, all the way through my childhood and teenage years and 20s to watch Palace, because as you say, once it's your team, that's your team. My brother, by the way, is a West Ham fan.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And again, a funny story. My dad took him to a Brentford game of trying to get his boy to support the local club because it would just be easier on him.
Yeah,
and Brentford were playing West Ham. It must have been a cup game, because I can't believe Brentford played West Ham many times in the league over the last 30 years. But he took him to a cup game, and Brentford won 5-0. So my dad was like, well, this is amazing. I mean, obviously, he's going to be a Brentford fan. No, I want to be a Hammers fan. I'm a West Ham fan. And so my poor dad had one kid wanting to go to Palace and one wanting to go to West Ham. But my brother, yeah, big West Ham fan. So West Ham's always been a big part of my life, I have to say.
Well, it sounds like we should have interviewed your brother instead.
he would be a good interview. He's a journalist. He's a sports journalist in England as well. So he's very much in the business. And yeah, big Hammers fan.
Very cool. And our stories are very much the same. I didn't have a choice. My dad grew up in Perivale and he ended up supporting West Ham. So I'm surprised they probably ran into each other through the years, honestly, if they were both traveling from West London to go to Upton Park. I mean, honestly, their paths have probably crossed several times, which is just crazy.
Especially on that tube ride that you have to take. You never get off it. You start in Ealing Broadway and you never get off. It feels like 7 years on that tube all the way to Upton Park.
Yes.
It's a long way, but it's a good trip, yeah.
Yeah, because his journey would start at Perivale. You'd get off at Mile End, you switch at Mile End, and then you're on the District Line to Upton Park, so... it's amazing. So let's jump into your career in sports. So I know you've worked for some amazing companies through the years, the ones that I mentioned earlier, and I don't mean to gloss over that, but I want to start with your time at NBC. So I wanted to first know, was it really tough for you to move from living in England to the United States, and how did that go for you transitioning from over there to over here?
I've always loved the United States. So I wouldn't say that the practicalities of moving are very difficult. As everybody knows, when you move house, it's a nightmare, let alone moving countries and the legality of visas and moving your entire worldly goods on a container ship that never arrives for 10 weeks. And you're having to sleep on an air mattress for 2 weeks and working out how to drive on the right and working out where how to get like to Walmart and to the supermarket and not knowing what the hell's going on. That took a while, and getting used to a slightly different culture, which it is definitely a different culture. So it was a challenge, but I wouldn't say it was tough. Luckily for me, my husband came with me when I first got offered the job, which was the November. Gosh, I think I signed my contract in January or February of 2013.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And my husband was the manager of Luton Town at the time.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And he'd just taken them to the fifth round of the FA Cup, and they'd beaten Norwich, and it was this huge, you know, it was doing really well. And I said to him, I've been offered this job. And for about 20 minutes, we were trying to work out how I could go, and he could maybe come on later at some point, maybe when he left Luton, but, you know. And then after about 20 minutes, we were like, no, this isn't going to work. He's just going to come. So he resigned not long after, and he came with me. We got married, and he came with me. And that was a huge part of it, because I think coming on my own would have been really, really, really hard to be away from him. So for him to give up his career in the UK, which was amazing, to come with me was a huge help to make that transition possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. It's I can't imagine what that's like, and especially for Paul to give up his managerial career to join you. I mean, that sounds like that's like the man of your dreams, isn't it?
Oh, without a doubt, my friend, without a doubt. And you know, giving that kind of level of job up to come to a country which, as you know, is still not well. It's just not in a place ready to. You can't transition seamlessly if you're a manager, because it just doesn't quite equate, you know. So he had to go right back to the beginning, and he ended up working as a director of soccer at an academy in Queens, New York, just to try and start to learn which is so different, youth soccer over here, to try and start getting back up the ladder. So he basically went playing against Norwich at Carrow Road in the fifth round of the FA Cup to coaching kids in Queens 6 months later and trying to start his progress back up the ladder, which he's now, you know, doing brilliantly at. So it's, but it's taken some time, you know, and it's a huge sacrifice. So yeah, man of my dreams for sure.
That's awesome. My next question for you, I kind of wanted to get into what it's like to be a woman in this industry. I know that's got to be intimidating, especially when you start in such a male dominated industry. Can you speak to what it's like to be a woman working in a what's traditionally known as a man's game?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I started when I was 21, and yes, it was definitely intimidating. At age 21 at the BBC, I was one of two or three women, not only in front of the camera, but behind the camera as well. And that was tough. But I think when you're 21, you're quite fearless at that age. And I think that you also accept the status quo that society is showing you, rather than at 21 having the equipment to fight that. So right now, if it was still as bad as it was then, I would be wanting to fight that, because I'm 38 and I'm more experienced and I'm like, this is wrong. But when you're 21, it's just the way it is. And I grew up knowing that I was a rarity. I grew up all the way through my high school years. There was only one friend of mine who liked soccer. No one else did. So I knew I was kind of an anomaly like that. So when I went into the workplace, and yet again, I was one of the only females there, that was kind of normal to me. But yes, it was still intimidating. And yes, I would go to an Arsene Wenger press conference and I'd ask a question and the entire room would turn around to look, who the hell has just asked that woman is here? You know, and I did get a lot of comments and I did get a lot of interesting experiences with people in the industry, which were hard. But like I say, I think in a way I was lucky, because being that young and starting my career that young, I just dealt with it. I soaked it up and knew that that was the challenge. And okay, well, if that's the challenge, I'm not going to moan about it. I've just got to beat it. And you know, and now it's a lot better in the UK, a lot better than when I was younger. And here I find it, I don't even think about gender at all. Okay. And I'm way past that. But I can still see the problems that there are. There are still problems, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not on Twitter for a reason, gentlemen. you know, I was on Twitter 10 years ago and I lasted about 3 months and the abuse was so off the charts. I just had to come off it. It was just miserable. So there are obviously still major issues in the world. And I think that the female in a man's world issue is in soccer is one that is not, and has only just now really been dealt with. And rightly so, we've been dealing with racism and homophobia and all those things in the game in England, and we should be, with Kick It Out and all these different initiatives. But I tell you, I mean, the abuse I used to get standing on the sideline, you know, waiting to interview Ferguson or Mourinho, whoever it was, was terrible sexist abuse. And no one batted an eyelid. And sexism is definitely the poor man's discrimination, in terms of it's never seen as important as the other ones. And ultimately, it's all the same. You're being discriminated against based on something that's not your fault.
Right.
So I found that whilst I accepted it, it took me a long time to realize that I could fight against it. And so I eventually, you know, started to kind of be a bit stronger where that's concerned. But in the early days, you're so desperate to get on with your career and try and be somebody and be something that you just suck up whatever is dealt your way, you know. And it's not great, but it's the way it is.
Yeah. Well, Brawley's going to get mad at me for going out of line here, but I just was wondering if you guys like stick together as women in sports, because there's so many fantastic women in sports. Like, I listen to Katie Nolan and I like Mina Kimes and all their podcasts and stuff, and obviously I idolize you on Saturday morning. So I was just wondering, like, do you guys all get to communicate with each other and help each other, or is it like, hey, we just do our thing and because we're good at our jobs?
That's a really good question. No, I feel a real sisterhood country. Mm-hmm. Katie Nolan's reached out to me a number of times on Instagram, and we've had a lot of fun and back and forth, and I'm good friends with Julie Stewart Binks, and every woman at NBC, Catherine Tappin. You know, we're all in it together, and there is definitely a sense now, especially in this country, where there are more jobs for women. So there are more sports, and so there's more jobs and there's more networks. So in this country, 100% stick together. When I was coming through in the UK, it wasn't quite the same, and I don't blame any female for this at all, but back in those days there was only about three available slots for females. So had like 10 of us at the time wanting those jobs. It wasn't a case of sticking together. I found that it was kind of slightly dog-eat-dog, really, which it kind of had to be because they just weren't the job. So the competitive nature, and by the way, females are way more competitive than males. The competitiveness came out in us because we were fighting for our own careers, and we were fighting against so much. It was against us. It wasn't like, oh, she's really good and she's really good, let's employ both of them. No. Why would we employ two women? Let's just employ one. And therefore, if there's only one job and you're all going for it, you know, that's tough, and you know that. But as I say, things in the UK have definitely changed now since I left. It's gone from, you know, 3 females in soccer to, like, I don't know, 30. I mean, it's amazing. And I get the sense, purely from social media and talking to some friends back there, that the sisterhood feeling and the supportive nature is definitely present now in the UK, purely because more jobs, more of an acceptance of women in the game, meaning we don't all have to elbow each other out the way. And that's thank God, because that's not fun. You want to stick together, but you also, it kind of, back in the day, that sort of doesn't make sense because you're all competitive with each other, you know? So it's hard, but definitely now, yeah, big, big fan of all the women here. And I really admire the women here. I mean, some of the jobs they do and the strides they've taken, it's amazing. It's wonderful to see. I'm really proud.
Oh, that's awesome. So now I kind of want to dive into your days on NBC. And my main question, and we had Arlo White on the show, and I got to ask Arlo about this because obviously he's a Leicester fan. We all know that now. I wanted to know for you, how hard is it to stay unbiased on live TV? Like for last week, let's put last week. Van Aanholt scores in the 93rd minute or whatever he scores and to beat United at Old Trafford. In the studio, are you just going nuts watching that game? Because when you're on TV, you would never know. You would never know that you're a Palace fan. And you do such an amazing job staying unbiased. And I don't know how you do it.
Well, I appreciate that a lot because that's really important to me, what you said at the end there. Very, very, very important. When I first moved here, I didn't realize, but over there in the States, of course, hosts and announcers don't tell you who they support. So It was already out. It was already public that I was a Palace fan before I got the job. So I couldn't suddenly start hiding behind it. And of course, once the Men in Blazers get any kind of information on you, it's all over. everyone knew. But of course, I have to be unbiased. Do I find it hard? Yeah. On the whole, it's manageable because I'm used to it. I've done it now for so many years. But an example like last weekend was not that easy because, especially it being a last-minute goal, I mean, at least give me some time to calm down.
Yeah.
The hardest thing is, you know, yes, do I punch the air and jump? Possibly. but my overriding thing is my job. And so immediately I have to ask myself the question, what is the story here? So when the commentator stops talking and you hear my voice for the first time, I try to come in with one or two lines, whether it's a stat or a big picture concept or something. And I'm always asking myself, right, what is the story of this game? And I have to be extra careful when it's Palace in a situation like that, because Manchester United losing at home is a big story no matter what.
Yes.
But in this particular case, Crystal Palace doing it for the first time in a generation, I thought was a bigger story. But I have to double check myself, because do I think that's a bigger story because I'm a Palace fan, or do I think that's a bigger story because it is a bigger story? So I sometimes check with the boys. I'll just kind of say to the boys, this is massive, isn't it, guys? You know, because you're so blinkered red and blue in your life that you've sometimes just got to double check yourself. But there have been times when it is difficult. I was live on air in the UK once reporting from a Palace game against Charlton, and the final whistle went and we were relegated while I was live on BBC One. I sat there in tears for half an hour after I came off air. I somehow made it through, but my voice was shaking. It's very difficult. What's so surprising is that I've actually had 7 years of Palace in the Premier League. I mean, that's never happened before.
Right.
So every year I think it's going to get easier for me because I'll get relegated. But then obviously I don't want them to get relegated because the idea of broadcasting their relegation fills me with dread. That would be awful. But yeah, it's on the whole, it's manageable, but you get the odd day where you are tested to the max.
So I just want a quick question off of that, if you don't mind. When you said that you just check around the room, do they give you the freedom to kind of do, since you are a journalist and a presenter, do you get to choose what you say kind of sort of with that freedom of picking your headline or whatever? Or do you have to run it through a whole thing?
Oh, no. I completely have editorial freedom.
Nice.
The thing I say that comes out of my mouth is what I think, what I want to say.
Awesome.
Every single thing. I mean, I don't write anything down. The only thing I write is the very beginning of the show. If you ever see the beginning of the show and I sort of welcome everybody in, a small script for that that I write the night before. But other than that, nothing is written. It's all ad-libbed. And so you have enough editorial judgment to be able to know that what you're saying is the right thing. But that's part of my job. I mean, if I didn't know anything about the game, I couldn't do the job, right? So right. They trust me enough to say the right thing at the right time. And that's what I should be doing, because as a host of a major network show in sport, you have to know that you've got that you have to be dialed into the right moment, and therefore the bosses, you know, have to trust you that you're going to say the right thing. So yeah, absolutely everything I say is mine for sure.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is awesome. I know we're running low on time here, so I just kind of want to briefly run through a couple more things here. I've noticed this year NBC Sports have started making their colors and themes look much more like Sky Sports, and I know there hasn't been a whole lot said about that, but can you speak to that at all, or is that kind of...
Absolutely. No, it's a beautiful new relationship. So Comcast purchased Sky Sports a year ago, or whatever it was, and you know, these things are massive operations, these are massive companies, so it takes a while for that purchase and that coming together of Sky and NBC to dribble down to for the bosses to work out how they want that relationship to work. But of course it makes great sense, because Sky Sports are the leading broadcaster of football. The way they do it is second to none, in my opinion, and has been for 25 years. So we now have the opportunity to dial into that, and vice versa. And so when they've got Jose Mourinho on their show, let's hear from him. When they've got when they've got pitch side, they've got an interview with Marco Silva at the pitch side desk. It's better to hear from that than it is to hear from him in front of a advertising board. So we're dialing with that. It's an important, huge part of our identity now, is that we have this relationship with Sky. And so let's make it look similar. So the graphics, as you say, it's much more like Sky. It's still very much NBC, because we own them, if you like. But let's not be short-sighted, and that Sky do things very, very well. So if we can learn from anything, if we can borrow anything, if we can merge anything like the graphic situation, which we've merged, let's do it. Let's get it as one big happy family. And that's definitely the idea moving forward. And it's wonderful to have, you know, Sky is the only company I've never worked for. And suddenly I'm kind of like in a partnership with them, and it's great. We went there at the beginning of the season and we did the transfer show from there. They are the leader. So for us to be able to be part of that is magic.
Yeah, well, I was talking to Tony at the beginning of the season. I was like, have you noticed how much this is starting to look more like Sky and less like just the old NBC stuff? And he was like, yeah, you're right, actually. It is amazing, because Tony's lived over there. I go over there probably once a year, so I get to watch Sky. The fans over here in America probably don't realize that, because they don't see Sky very often. So I always thought that was amazing when I told Tony. He's like, you know what? You're right. It does kind of look a lot like
Sky. Sky Sports News is on for a few hours every day, like I said. And NBC Sports Gold, you know, I was just logging into that this morning to show it to my dad. And you can watch Soccer AM and Goals on Sunday and Soccer Saturday. Like, it's let's be honest, at the end of the day, for the football fan, it's got to be a good thing, because it's merging two massive companies and all the resources and all the editorial nows and all the fun, you know, to make the best possible quality product for the viewer. And that's ultimately all we care about.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I totally agree. So that's awesome. So Tony, I don't mean to skip over your questions here, but
it's okay, because
really
we're running out of time. Just finish it up.
I want to move on to West Ham. So this current West Ham team, I want to get your general thoughts on West Ham as a whole this season under Manuel Pellegrini. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that I was very interested pre-season, when a lot of people thought that the Hammers were actually as likely, if not more, than Leicester to break into the top six. Mm. And I was really surprised when a lot of people said that. You know, no offense, but I was like, no. Really? And then when you go through their squad, you actually realize, you forget about Yarmolenko. You forget he even exists. And to be honest, at times you forget about Lanzini, because of the amount of time he spent out as well. When they bought Sebastian Allaire, or however it was to pronounce it, I thought, well, it's a lot of money. If he hits the ground running, they're in business here. Because with the likes of Lanzini and Felipe Anderson, with the likes of Felipe Anderson and Yarmolenko and Lanzini, and chipping in with Antonio, chipping in with assists and goals, Jack Wilshere, if we can get him fit and play every game, you know, with those kind of players and a decent back four. And some good crosses coming in, it could be good. And then when you see Allaire score two goals, and you're like, wow, he looks good.
Yeah.
Then you start looking at on. You think maybe, you know, they've got a really experienced manager, of course, who's been there, done it. Won't get to the top six. I'm not one of those people who thinks they will, but I'm starting to think that I underestimated this team this season. And I know they've had a fine start, a solid start. It's been fine. It's not been amazing. It's not been terrible. But that's kind of okay. They've slightly flown under the radar, which I think is a good thing at this stage. Certainly not going to be relegation fodder. So, you know, I think it's actually as about as bright a future as the Hammers fans could have hoped for at this stage.
I totally agree. And quickly, does West Ham finish above or below Crystal Palace this season?
Oh, against my better judgment, against what my heart tells me, they're going to finish above.
Hey, all right.
We'll be in a relegation situation like we are every year.
Yeah, well, look at you being unbiased there, too. Good for you. I like that. and real quickly here, I want to get into the American fans. So I want to kind of get your general thoughts on American fans as a whole and the growth of the Premier League over the last 5 years, because you've gotten to see it from its beginnings and now where we're at now.
Yeah, insane, chaps. I mean, just to let you know, the viewing figures this season, I don't know whether it's a holistic thing or whether it's a line in the sand, it's a general waking up to soccer thing. I don't know. Whether it's the Women's World Cup, I don't know. But we are up big time. And I mean big time. Every single game is up in a significant percentage.
That's awesome.
I mean, the first Chelsea-Man United game, at Old Trafford, Man United-Chelsea, with that game, compared to the same slot this time last season, was up 47% audience. I mean, anyone telling you that soccer is not on the up, you know, whatever. It's taking over, and it really feels like we've made giant strides this season. The growth has been massive. I mean, now we do these fan fests, and you know, you go to these cities and you see these people. I mean, it's everywhere. You know, every city has got its fan bases of every club, and it's growing. No matter what anyone's going to try and do, this sport will take over this country. Whether it's not, it may not be in our lifetime, but it'll be the number one without a shadow of a doubt within a hundred years, because it has everything going for it. The rest of the world knows that, and America is waking. It's waking up to it. And I always said, as soon as the sleeping giant that is the States wakes up to the realization that this is the best game in the world, because the rest of the world can't be wrong, then America will be the hotbed. And it's exciting. If you're a young American boy, like my little boy's three, and he's already played soccer, I'm excited for him to be growing up in a country where it's going to be big, because America should be winning the World Cup every 4 years. I mean, they really should be, with the facility, the amount of people they have, and the amount of, you know, funding they have. That's what they should be doing. I mean, they're not at the moment, but that will happen. I mean, that will happen. They win everything else in the world, so you know, the Olympics and everything. So why not soccer? So they'll get there. So yeah, it's growing at an incredible pace. I'm honoured to be a part of that, and it makes me very proud when I see a shirt at the airport, and I see a shirt at the supermarket, and I see that happens all the time now. I see fans everywhere, and it's just wonderful, wonderful.
It's super tough for me because I live in Harrisburg, Hershey area, where Christian Pulisic is from. So I luckily am a little bit older and didn't play against him in high school, or he would have absolutely smashed me up. But anyway, so I was hoping if I could get you to. So Katie does your voice as her ad reads on her podcast. So I was wondering if you could give us a mini American accent, if you could give it a shot.
Oh my God, you guys, I'm like just arriving at the airport, so I really can't belong. But you know, it's kind of like that. It's basically really melodic and really goes really low, and then it goes really high like that, like really cute. So yeah, that's my American.
Very good. That's amazing. Well, we won't take up any more of your time. We had a bunch of other questions to ask you, but I know you're running short on time here. So we really appreciate it. And just thank you from the bottom of our hearts. This is a huge get for us to get you on here. And I know I got lucky messaging you at like 3 a.m. when you're jet lagged in England. And I just got lucky. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us.
You are so welcome. We'll do it again. You can ask me the rest of those questions, because I genuinely am arriving at the airport right now to get to work. So no problem at all, guys. And then we'll do it again in the future. Yeah, we'll connect again.
Absolutely. We'll have to have you on one more time. And thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again in the future.
No problem. Say hi to your cat that's right behind you.
I will do. All right. Thank you.
That was one of the most amazing interviews I've ever done. This podcast has given us some fantastic opportunities that we wouldn't have had before. And all I can do is thank you to our listeners for continuing to support us. Thank you to the guests that come on here. And it's been one of the best rides. Three seasons, five episodes into this one, and I enjoy it every day. And thanks again to my amazing co-host, Brawley, who isn't here. A few things that we need to just add like we normally do. Brawley usually does this part because I jack it up, but I guess I have to come through and be strong, so be prepared. The Twitter is at WestHamPodUSA. If you want to send us an email, it is AmericanWestHamPod@gmail.com. Brawley also wants me to always say that please rate and subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us 5 stars. It helps us get higher up in the table. And when you search West Ham, we can be the first ones that pop up there. So that will be really useful. The only thing else is the website, AmericanWestHamPodcast.com. We have some amazing articles and blog posts going out there. Dan is going to try and start doing some special analytic analysis. Nick has Nick's Sporting Goods Corner. Nigel has his history section, and I'm trying to do some previews here and there. We have a lot of fun content. If you want to write something on there, get in touch. If you have something to say and you're a decent enough writer, it can't be any worse than I am. Other than that, enjoy your international break, and come on, you Irons.